into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The Football Show
with Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunluey.net.
I'm prepared to do anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
I was, it wasn't bad, was it?
Why should it be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
There he goes. 1-2. Opens up. Back for Sadio Mane. And it was coming. Mane scores for Liverpool. What a wonderfully worked team goal. The three Liverpool front men linking up. The 1-2 on the edge of the area with Firmino and Salah. And a beautiful delivery from Roberto Firmino straight onto the head of Sadio Mane, who heads it past a flying Kepa. And you've got to say, it's no more than Liverpool deserve for their start in the second half. Chelsea 0, Liverpool 1. Sadio Mane. Oh, keeper's made a mess of it. Mane. Sadio Mane scored a second. It's an absolute horror show from Kepa. Chelsea playing it around from the back. And as Kepa looked to play it forward, Mane put the pressure on him, got a toe poke on it, and he slides it into the empty net from 6 yards out. What a start to the second half for Liverpool and Sadio Mane. But Kepa, well, the end can't come soon enough for Chelsea supporters with their goalkeeper. That is a shocker.
Yeah, it wasn't great. Great. That was the way we saw things on commentary yesterday. Liverpool 2-0 winners at Stamford Bridge across what was a goal bonanza weekend. 39 goals in 8 games. Everton 5-2 winners against West Brom. Leeds, I think we're going to enjoy Leeds, 4-3 winners against Fulham. Crystal Palace beat Manchester United by 3-1 at Old Trafford. We had Southampton going down 5-2 to Spurs. Arsenal 2-1 winners against West Ham. Brighton 3, Newcastle 0. And Leicester 4, Burnley 2. Pat Nevin. Good evening. Goals, Pat. Goals everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere you go. I mean, I've been to two games, actually, at two games so far, and I've had a 4-3 and a 3-0. But every time you turn around, it's just goals all over the place. And I'm trying to figure out, I don't know if anyone's, why? I mean, you could argue that the part of the reason is, you know, players aren't up to it yet. They're not 100%, you know, fully fit yet. But surely that should apply to the forwards as well. Maybe they've not done the work that they should have done on the defenders or the defences and structuring them. But a lot of the defences are the same defences that were there last season. So I'm not sure that one holds up either. And I just wonder, it's a bit early, but I just wonder if, do you know the teams that are winning things like Liverpool and Man City and like defending secondary? Are there more teams that are thinking, all right, that's the way to go now, and they're just being hell for leather and going for it? It's probably a bit of everything, isn't it? Mm. But it's extraordinary the way it started this season.
Yeah, it sure is. So let's start at Stamford Bridge then. Liverpool 2, Chelsea 0. This was utterly a routine for Liverpool in so many ways.
Right from the start. I mean, I think Chelsea fans might look at it and think, well, they're sending off just before half time. And it goes pear-shaped after that, but that would not be true because Chelsea were a long way away. Well, first of all, Liverpool looked great, looked really comfortable. Probably they ought to, because that's a team that's been playing together for 3-4 years, really building up to it. And you look at the Chelsea side that's put up there, and certainly two of the front men haven't really settled in yet. The two, Werner and Kai Havertz, haven't really settled in yet. And, of course, I think what everybody knows and what Frank Lampard's probably acutely aware of is the defence still isn't right yet. So they seemed a real distance off, but it's early days for Chelsea. You can't tell too much for them. One thing you can tell definitely is that Liverpool, they look hot. They look as if they can score almost at ease. And like last season, they can change the pace again whenever they fancy it. And I think when they were 2-0 up against Chelsea, they took the foot off the gas. And had they needed to lift it again, they would have.
Yeah, it was a very consummate professional performance on Liverpool's part. You mentioned Havertz and Timo Werner there. What were your early impressions? Where are these two going to play for Chelsea?
Well, I don't know, because I'm guessing Frank Lampard doesn't know. on the negative side, so it's not obvious. On the positive side, well, you can play Werner wide attack either side and centre forward. You can play Havertz about three different positions as well. He's better on the right, but he can play 10. You know, he can play a bit deeper as well. And he can play centre forward. You can say the same about Pulisic when he comes back as well. So if you get them all firing, and by the way, they can all play, that could be extra special for them. In the short term, I have a suspicion they'll end up going for Giroud or Tammy Abraham directly through the middle, and the others coming from wide, so attacking areas, the likes of Havertz and Timo Werner coming from wide. But Werner in particular, he worked hard and all the rest of it, but I'm sure you've heard, everyone listening has heard, that the guy's absolutely lightning, one of the quickest players in the league. You've not really seen that yet, have you?
No.
you wouldn't think, having watched him, my God, he is incredible. He's just like lightning, but it doesn't look like that. But he's not lost his pace. He just needs to get to match fitness, and he'll be a danger. I don't think anyone's looking after a couple of games. I mean, he's got a couple of penalties for him as well, but after a couple of games, it's too early to judge those two, certainly.
No, I'd hope so, because I watched Fabinho pick his pocket twice in the penalty area, and I was thinking, well, this isn't a good start.
Well, he's not a winger. He's a wide attacker. I specifically said wide attacker. Mm. You get a one-on-one and he has to do a wee jinky dribble. I don't think that's him. But if he goes and attacks and he gets all his pace, he just goes by people with pace. And it's pure pace when he's got it. On this occasion, he was starting and there was no explosion there. And when he tried the jink, it didn't look good at all. He just didn't look like a skillful winger. Mm. But as a wide attacker, when he gets going, I'm pretty confident he'll score quite a few goals. But do you know what? That might not happen for a wee while yet. And certainly with Havertz, if you look at his history, he's very similar. He goes through periods, particularly at the beginning of the season sometimes, where he doesn't score for a while, and then when he goes in a run, he's like unstoppable. And I've watched both of them as finishers, and both of them are spectacularly good finishers, and Chelsea definitely needed that. So not best to gauge them against Liverpool, and certainly not best to gauge them this early on.
No, it's true. It does this season more than, well, any I can really remember, feel like we're on shaky ground when it comes to making early conclusions here. It's impossible to know who's fit and who's not fit.
Yeah, I suppose what I was trying to get my head around it is, in times gone past, this would be about the third week of pre-season. You know, you've not even played a game yet, really. You're 2 weeks away from a game still. You know, and even when you get the first two or three games, you say, well, you're not really up to speed for another two or three games yet. So you are talking five or six games before some players are up to it. And I think specifically players that aren't used to the league. It's a big thing coming into a different league with a different style. It sounds like a footballer's excuse, but there's a couple of complicated things that are generally happening. A, you're playing with a group of people who don't actually know your specific strengths, where exactly they should play the ball to you, where you like to go. Because everyone's got places where they like to go and they start understanding that, but it takes a little while. You also have to know that what your teammates are good at. You know, I mean, we might know how good Rhys James is at putting a cross in, but unless you've watched it quite a lot and spent a bit of time on it, you don't actually make those runs yet. So, and that's for any player in the league. So that's when I watch somebody like Crystal Palace, and they've started really well, haven't they? Mm. It's just the same team again. They just have a wee bit more confidence that they've got. So they're not having to do anything different. They absolutely know exactly what each other does. So that's a real help. So teams that might struggle a wee bit are the ones that sometimes bring two, three, four players in at a time. And at the moment, the most obvious of them is Chelsea. But still, I have to say it's been a bit disappointing because they didn't play that well against Brighton, got the result. And against Liverpool, they were by a distance second best, by a long distance.
Mm. Meanwhile, Kepa, you almost hate to bring it up. Last season, you know, he's coming off the back of a season where he had the worst save percentage in Europe's top five leagues. He saves about 54% of shots which come his way. That was his average last season. We are talking about the most expensive goalkeeper in history here. It's quite an extraordinary situation. He needed that moment yesterday like a hole in the head.
Yeah, to be honest, it happened before that during the game. There was a cross ball put in early, back post. Most of the time, most keepers, and including him when he's confident, he just goes and catches it. And he does this flappy punch thing, and you're thinking, you actually look smaller than you did 6 months ago. You look inside yourself. And it's you know, obviously, it's so much on top of him. You know, certainly the goals he's lost. But also, you can't ignore the fact of what's happening in the press, what's happening with fans, which people just don't rate him. And it's really filtered down. You add on top of that, he's actually not particularly good at playing out from the back. And he's been asked to play out from the back. He's done good at it. You know, some goalkeepers are, some PO's keepers aren't. Well, he's not. He's just not very good at that. Mm. I give back sympathy for him, because when you've been asked to play that sort of intricate pass and move out, some centre-backs can do it, and they're outfield players. And you're asking certain goalkeepers to do it that just are not trained to do it. They're not capable of doing it and never will be. And, you know, that was a painful one for him. I think that was the second most painful thing that happened to him. The most painful thing, when Frank Lampard was asked later about him and said, "I don't want to say any more," and you thought, "Oh dear, that did not." That's a horrible thing to hear. That almost feels like, "I don't want to say any more, because if I tell you the truth, it will be so painful, and I'm just going to shut up." And that was a really that sounded really bad if you're Kepa just now. Maybe Frank didn't mean that, but you don't want to hear that if you're a player.
I suspect he did. Because he tried to defend him very recently, maybe it was last week, and it just gets tricky.
He won't now. Yeah. He couldn't now. There's no way you're going to do that in that situation. And he just didn't look that confident in the game. So I think everyone accepts it's you know, the writing's probably on the wall for him. And you feel sorry for somebody, but that's the business. The business is tough, you know, and the thing is about Kepa, get another team that will want him when he eventually does move on, if they get him out before the transfer window finishes. But I think for his benefit, you wouldn't be surprised if it was the best thing.
Mm. Thiago for Liverpool came on, and I think it was very apparent to everybody. He settled in very nicely in many ways. He gave me some touches on the ball. Thank you very much. You know, all that experience and confidence was evident. Can I put something Kenny Cunningham said this morning on our morning show to the lads? He said of Thiago, their squad is strengthened by Thiago's arrival, but for me, they have spent £30 million on a third choice number six. I think he's inferior to Fabinho and Jordan Henderson in that role. That's why I'm surprised they brought him in. He's an experienced player, he's a good technician. We saw a bit of that yesterday, but what we also saw were defensive deficiencies. We saw the number of missed tackles, we saw the penalty he gave away. He's weak defensively. Thoughts?
That's quite harsh on him, considering there's lots of positives to his game as well. He's got a bit more vision than some of the other players there. I think he's a little bit more creative than that. He's not really a goal scorer. I don't think that's his thing at all. But if you look at what's beginning to fade maybe in the Liverpool midfield, the backup likes of Milner can't last forever. You need to cover that at some point in time. And somebody can play a couple of positions, which Thiago can do. You know, he can play a little bit further forward, he can play six. He is adaptable in that position, and he's shown that at a very, very top level. The other question is actually Wijnaldum. You know, will Wijnaldum stay? You know, it looked likely that he was going to leave. You know, the contract, I understand, is running out. It's got a year to go. So they had to cover that position, because they couldn't go in this season without adding anything much. But then if any of those two players either go or have a longer term injury, you're really beginning to be stretched. And considering how stretched they are up front, they needed numbers in there. So they couldn't bring in just anybody who, you know, who's just not up, nowhere near that level. They've brought somebody who is at that level. So I think it makes perfect sense. And they've not broke the bank to do it either. Now and again, you need that. It's not a squad filler. That's offensive to say that to him. He's more than that. Is he going to make them fabulously better? Probably not. But he's going to make sure they don't get any worse.
It's going to be a really interesting season. I mean, Liverpool, it was funny. Like, that game yesterday was the first big game against a team at their level. Leeds fans, you'll allow me that, I think, that they've had to win probably since the Atletico game. You know, they're almost, and yet they got right back into the habit. The odds this season on, if you take players that will have a marked impact on their performances if they're to be injured for a long period, the odds again on Salah, Mane, Firmino, let's throw in Van Dijk, Trent and Robertson, going effectively another whole season, all of them, without long-term injuries. That feels increasingly remote, doesn't it?
We see every season. This will be the third season, probably. And, you know, we've been proved wrong twice. So you may be proved wrong again. But that's got to be partially luck. It has to be partially luck. Players don't, you know, they're not superhuman. They get injured. They're human beings. It will happen at some point in time. And they are riding their luck to some degree. It's intelligent use of players. I'll grant you that. He's changed the system style. You know, they're not high tempo all the time. They don't play the gegenpress all the time. I get it. So you've kind of, you've lessened the chances of those players getting injured, but they will. Yeah. It will happen. And also on top of that, which did happen last season, once or twice players went through dull periods where they didn't play well. Salah had a period where he wasn't playing well. And it's taken a huge chance. Now, they were in for Werner. They wanted Timo Werner, but obviously they balked at the well over £50 million price tag. And you accept that. You didn't think it was worth taking a chance on it. But somebody of that ilk would have. I mean, if they went and got a Wilfred Zaha and brought him in, you'd think, that's it, done. Mm. Job done. You're okay this year. But it does take something almost of that ilk to bring in. But maybe they want to take that chance again. It's a big, big chance to take, though. But it worked last year, so it might work again.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said, you mentioned Zaha, he said, we'll need to take a look at ourselves. I'm sure they will. Now, he did also say August 16th is when our season finished. We are not fit. We are just not fit. And maybe that is the only explanation for just how terrible they were and comprehensively beaten they were. What was going on here?
Well, it's funny. I watched McTominay was playing in there, and I was thinking, because I watched him, and he's all energy a lot of the time. You know, he's not the best player on the team, but, you know, at least you're going to get all the energy. And he looked sluggish as well. And I've watched him playing for Scotland. And exactly the same. I'm thinking, what's happened? You know, and there's been a lot of players like that. I mean, some players, when you come back for a pre-season, some players, you just flew from the start. You just felt great. I was dead lucky. It might be something you've got to do. It's a wee bit easier for the lighter guys, the little guys, you know. But to get the big, poor guys up and going to that level right away. Another player who was playing earlier on today was John McGinn, and he had such a sluggish start again with Scotland, but it's beginning to come. And you will get that with a number of players. It just seemed to happen with quite a few of them at Manchester United there, and they can't really afford that, especially with the kind of liveliness that you saw with Crystal Palace. But it just happened. There are some players, it just takes a while to get them going, and it's hard to explain why. You watch them in pre-season, working as hard as everybody else. The numbers look the same as everybody else's, but they just don't seem to be able to fly so easily. And the phrase you always use in pre-season is like, you get through it to get to that bit where it doesn't hurt anymore. So you're running for 90 minutes and it's actually, you kind of don't feel it. Mm. You just keep on going for most of it, and running at full pace for a long period of time doesn't really get to you. But it takes a while to get there. It just takes different players a period of time. If you've got, it might only be three or four in your team that are not doing that. See, if you get three or four in your team that are, you know, a good bit off it, the rest of them, they'll look bad as well.
Sure.
Because they might be up against 9 or 10 who are absolutely up and ready for it. So it's, in this season, everything's exaggerated and accentuated because of the lack of break, which, again, going back to the goals thing, that might be part of that as well.
And Pat, if we look, I mean, Manchester United have sorted out a lot in recent times and offensively can put together seriously competitive numbers now. But you think how they bowed out of the Europa League semi-final against Sofia, it was a defensive issue. And you saw on Saturday, I mean, defensively, pretty awful as well. You know, and I'd say Harry Maguire's probably had a rough couple of weeks, you know, I don't doubt it. But if we were, you know, talking about Manchester United aspiring to win leagues in 2 or 3 or even 4 years' time, probably at this stage, how many of that back four are hanging around?
Do you know, the Wan-Bissaka thing is kind of odd, because I've got this problem with, I don't think he's good enough going forward. But nowhere near, he's not in the top 4 or 5 English right backs going forward. Yet he was a big signing, and he has a good defender, and he's an interesting player, and he can go past people. But that's almost a failing now. But maybe that's enough for him. You just get a feeling they're never going to trust Shaw in the left hand side as well. Maguire, I suspect, with the right player around them, will be fine. You know, you just need somebody who works with them. I mean, you look at all the great centre half partnerships over the years, and even back in the day where Manchester United had some fantastic ones. Well, they weren't always perfect on their own, but they just worked really nicely together, and they knew which one attacked, they knew which how to work on with each other. They had a good understanding with each other. And it's something that, I'm not just talking Manchester United here, there's a lot of that around at the moment. Mm. You know, the thing I hate most is in my day we used to do this and people go, yawn, turn it off. But in actual fact, seeing the amount of good centre halves I played with, and I mean international world class ones, they just talk to each other all the time. And if they walk 2 yards out of line, he's maybe shout back and just shout them. And they would just always be in this piece of string with each other. I'm watching so many of these centre-half pairings and you can't call them a pairing. Mm. They just seem individuals who are playing a game. And there's a lot of them. I mean, you've talked about Chelsea before. I'm sure anyone who watched Christensen and Zuma in the game, how far apart they were for the sending off. You think, what would possess you to stand that far apart? There is no benefit to it. Mm. None whatsoever. You get close, you get tight, you work off each other. And it's like, I mean, I'm talking, if you played under 16 football, you learned that. And I'm watching a lot of teams now and thinking, you're not doing that. And it's really, and you're seeing it. When I watched the Leeds game I was at the other day, you know, playing against Fulham, you're thinking, why are you people not working together? And it's a very, very, very odd thing. So, yes, we might mention Maguire and whoever you want to put alongside him, but you need somebody you can talk to, you can relate to, you can understand each other. That's the same with every centre-half partnership. And I suspect Maguire just needs somebody beside him.
Okay. Everton 5, West Brom 2. So James is going to be fun. I think your Merseyside leanings are probably tingling a little bit. Zero sprints, Pat. I mean, I think to go out and play a Premier League football match and register zero sprints is like an achievement. You know, it's like, how can you even do that? But he did it. And then there was his goal and there was his dink to Richarlison. How's his general play? What's he doing for Everton?
Well, the general play is great. You know, the touches, the vision is fantastic. And I'll be honest, I'm hands up, but I wasn't convinced, not convinced at all, because is he going to be able to do it at that level? You know, the hurly-burly of the Premier League. And he's one of those players where you're talking about coming to the Premier League, it might take you a wee while. Now, let's be fair, that was West Brom. I went to see West Brom last week. They're going to struggle. They are seriously going to struggle. They're going to have a tough, tough time. So he just, the thing that got me more, yes, the flicks were good, yes, the goal, all that sort of stuff was good. Every time I looked at him, he was looking where the space was. He just kept on looking to the side. And he just kind of went into it effortlessly every time and found that space. And it's the oldest one in the book. It's a terrible cliche, good players find space. He was absolutely brilliant at it. So he didn't need to sprint into the space. He just let it develop and then moved into it at the right time. And that side of it, that level of match intelligence was a way above anybody else, certainly on that pitch on the day. The other thing that was kind of noticeable, he seemed to immediately develop a great understanding with Richarlison. Now, they'll get a lot of goals, I'm sure, for Calvert-Lewin. He's going to love playing with that. But him and Richarlison, it seemed to really work. It was a kind of real wavelength thing between the two of them. And I think there was a link up for goal, but also you watch Richarlison, he's actually now working much, much harder as of last season. But now he's putting it in and he's got somebody beside him who he believes is of his level now. So he's going to love playing with them. So, yeah, it's exciting times. There will be some games, by the way, he'll need to sprint. You know, he's good, but, you know, there's going to be some games you're going to need to put it in, mate. It's been a brilliant start for him. It's been a great start for Everton. The fans are kind of, they don't want to be carried away. They've had a few false dawns in the past, but I think they're going to be great fun to watch.
It seems that way. And you know, it's funny when, you know, Ancelotti arrived and I think there was a general sense he was yesterday's man. And what does he bring to the party? And he's a facilitator when he's got really good players at hand at Munich or Madrid. And lo and behold, they've re-emerged this season. Turns out he knows what he's doing, probably, Pat.
But I was more of the, because I talked to quite a few people down there when he came in, and then talked to people around the city, and they all keep on saying that same thing. He's in love with the place. He loves the club. He's now working with a club that's a football club. It's not a conglomerate. And I think he's been kind of completely reborn with it. He's found his kind of love of it. Now, you don't often see the big smiles from Carlo, but you can see that he's doing it actually now again for a passion, as opposed to the way he was doing it before, which was he looked like a very good consummate businessman running the business of a football team. And it kind of looks like something better than that. So I think it amazes me, and I wouldn't have seen it coming at all, but he has landed in the perfect place for himself. And the thing on top of that, expectations are limited, and they are limited still. Nobody's saying they're going to be top four. Yet he's got a team and he's got money. He's got a lot of money that he's been able to spend, but they've backed him in everything he wants. And James is a big one to be backed on. So they backed him in everything. So he looks like me, a man who thinks, I could spend 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years here, and then I might just leave and chuck it, and that's me, done. But his last one will be a labour of love, and it really does look like that. And I'm not just saying that because I'm partial to Everton. I've seen plenty of other managers there, but maybe it hasn't looked like a labour of love. It's just looked like a labour. But with him, no, I think he's falling in love with the place.
Aye, okay, very interesting. And while we're on Everton for a moment, Seamus Coleman looks to be back and enjoying his football, and you know, nice for him not to have to come out after every game and do an interview where he says, we know it's not good enough and the players have to do more. I mean the Republic of Ireland, don't have many Premier League starters, and so we do in Seamus Coleman and in Matt Doherty. Stephen Kenny, our new manager, plays a flat back four, and Coleman really owned that number two jersey for however long, guts of a decade at this stage. Kenny went with Matt Doherty. Would you have a strong leaning in a flat back four, Coleman or Matt Doherty, for Ireland?
I think both of them are international class and can do it. And the problem is similar to England and similar to Scotland. Do you know what your biggest problem is? You start manipulating everything to get them both in. And that's turned out to be a mistake for Scotland. You know, Scotland trying to get Kieran Tierney and Robertson in at left fullback. And you end up twisting and turning and putting three people in places they shouldn't be playing just to fit it so that they can play. And then you end up playing a three at the back where you get Tierney as a left centre-back, which is not his best position. He's a left-back, it's his best position, a left wing-back. And then you play Robertson as a wing-back, who's actually far better at left-back coming from deep. And you're actually blowing both of them. So the big thing is, make a decision, whatever one you're going to go for that particular game, and stick with them. Because the mistake you can make is just try to shove them all in because they're brilliant. You know, they're very, very good at what they do. That really can be a mistake. I mean, again, with England, they're incredible. They're the right fullbacks they've got. But you know, you look at Gareth, he's not jumped, has he? He's just went, no, this is the guy I'm going with this one. I'm not trying to fit another one in right midfield or that. You're just doing it right. So that's the thing. Make a choice. I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure how much difference it makes.
Yeah.
The problems are probably elsewhere.
Yeah. Don't worry, our issue is not Coleman or Doherty at right back. We have bigger fish to fry. I won't really get a chance to talk to you about Son and Kane doing their thing for Spurs. Obviously, Gareth Bale is set to arrive, or has arrived, which is pretty interesting. I don't think we've spoken since the season kicked off. So between the jigs and the reels and the early showings, this looks, I mean, City are 2-0 up and very comfortable and look sharp against Wolves at the moment. That's kind of a chastening opening weekend for the likes. Sorry, we're into the second week and now. Opening weekend for United, not for Chelsea. But that's a chastening weekend for Manchester United and for Chelsea. Spurs obviously lost in the opening weekend. I mean, any sense that they were edging closer to Liverpool or City's taken a bit of a dent?
Yeah, but I still think this, for all of them, it's a long-term goal. I don't think any of them think that they should be able to catch them this season because, you know, certainly it's just with Chelsea, it's half a new team. So you expect to walk in there, waltz in there and beat teams that have been set up in a different class for years. That's a long shot. Spurs is an interesting one because if you do get, and it's such a big if you do get Son and Kane, and then suddenly you get Bale as well, uninjured, and remember, the uninjured part of it is very, very, very important with Gareth Bale. That's actually really scary. You know, you could actually say Mourinho has no choice. He has to go and play the most open game imaginable. And that would be good, but will that be enough to catch the big two? Nah, I don't think so. And United, I don't know, I don't see it. I'm not saying if Paul Pogba ever again in my life, I'm fed up with saying it. Mm. You know, because you know it could happen, but the fact that it's not happening often enough, I just give up. And they'll have a great 2 or 3 months at one point, and everybody will say it's there. You've got to do it season after season if you're going, or certainly for an entire season if you're going to win. By the way, big chance they're missed by Wolves. They've had a couple of really good chances. Mm. Man City are back to their normal defending. But really for Manchester United, it strikes me as I'm not sure. If they get top four again, I still think they're doing really, really quite well.
Mm. Who do you think is going to win the league this year?
I was going to say City before I watched them tonight, because I've got buying Aki, I think, was a brilliant idea. I think Aki's a fantastic player for them because he's absolutely comfortable in the ball. He's good old-fashioned centre-half when he has to be a good old-fashioned centre-half, and we all knew that's where the weakness possibly was. You know, if they played their first 11 all the time, played their style, they'd probably win the league. I think it's a toss-up between Liverpool and Man City. I hope and expect it will be tight between the two of them. And it might even come down to, if Liverpool keep all their players fit, they'll probably win it. Do I think they will? Probably not, because I don't think they'll keep them all fit.
Mm. Okay. I'm just seeing actually second half attempts, Wolves 4 to Man City's 1, an hour on the clock. So I'm kind of watching this game and presenting the show as well. I said they look sharp. I've seen the goals. They haven't been overly impressive then, City, for you?
No, they were in the first half. They've just, Wolves in the last 5 minutes have missed 3 utter sitters, complete sitters. They are shredding City at the back at the moment. And they look completely lost. And, you know, that partnership of it's Ake and Stones at the moment. And
yeah.
Well, you don't need to say it. You know what the problem is immediately. What the problem is going to be there. Mm. You know, Ake and somebody else, maybe Stones and somebody else, but them two together, I'm not convinced that would be a first choice, really. So at the moment, they're being shredded, but they're very, very fortunate that the fact that they are still 2-0 up, and they'll probably see out the game. Mm. But Pep is absolutely beside himself, because at the moment, they're just beginning to look as if they're falling apart.
It's funny, you know, Damien Delaney was in here and he got to know John Stones a little bit coming through, and his sense of Stones as a personality was that he's a real worrier, like a very conscientious fella, nice fella, but a real worrier, and, you know, it just feels like all of this has gotten top of him, and maybe Pep isn't the most arm around the shoulder type, and ever since I've heard that, I am just rooting for John Stones in a big way, so I'm not delighted to hear what you're telling me tonight.
He does look like a nice guy, by the way. He's just lost his forward again. Yeah. Wolves have had another chance there, which they should have scored. But yeah, I would agree with that. He does look bad. And you're talking about Pep not being an arm around the shoulder guy. He was incredible the way he backed Stones early on. He backed him, and he backed him, and he backed him, and he talked to him, and he spoke to him all the time as if you are like my son.
Mm.
And after a while, he just thought, hey, we're trying to grow up now. And he just stood back from him. I think he's tried one way. I didn't think it worked well enough, quickly enough. I think he's trying the old tough love way at the moment. We'll find out if that's going to work. He does need to toughen up. He really does need to toughen up, psychologically.
Yeah. Pat and Evan, great as always. We'll talk to you next week. Cheers.
Look forward to it. See you then.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Welcome back. 66 minutes on the clock. Wolves 0, Manchester City 2 is the latest from Molyneux. We're turning to the game at the weekend. Germany 3, Ireland 0. Goals all came in the first half. Germany are a serious team. They have dished out beatings all campaign. That makes them 34 goals scored and 0 conceded. So I don't think Ireland were necessarily expected to go and win this game by Vera Pauw's own admission. 3-0 on the face of it doesn't look too bad at all. Stephanie Roach is with us, Republic of Ireland International, back at Piemont now as well. Stephanie, thanks for your time. How are things?
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
No, great to have you with us. So 3-0, 3 goals all came in the first half. Did Ireland improve in the second half, or did Germany ease up, do we think?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really positive thing to come from the game. I think, as you mentioned before, Vera kind of, going into the game, I suppose, was trying to put a dampener on it a little bit by saying, look, these are a really, really good team and it's going to be a difficult game for us. But I think going into the second half and the performance and just seeing how well the girls kind of kept the score at 3-0, because that would be really important come the end of the group. You know, it could go down to goal difference. And I think that's a, a huge thing for us that we were able to keep the score down against a team that are well capable of scoring a lot of goals against every team, which they've kind of proven throughout the group so far, you know.
Yeah, like it was noticeable they beat Ukraine, for example, 8-0 home and away. So that puts things into context here. It was interesting as well, Vera Powell got the team in the centre circle after the game, and she was saying, "I don't do that usually after games, but I was proud of how the players performed against probably the best team in the world." And she was making the point as well that the Netherlands, when she was coaching them, they lost 6-0 to Germany before the European Championships, where ultimately they reached the semi-finals, and was saying, you just have to go up against this kind of quality or you can't learn.
Yeah, I think she mentioned as well in her post-match interview about how the first half, I think maybe you're so overwhelmed by how good they are. Like they've got so many quality players, and as you mentioned, with the goals they've scored, it's so many players across the board that have scored the goals as well. So I think that first half performance was kind of good for the girls, but I think it kind of set them up, and they knew what they had to do in the second half. And as I said, I think we have to be proud of them. I think to put it into context, like this German team are a long way ahead of us. I think the gap definitely is getting better. It's short that we're kind of closing in on them. But like this German team are, as you mentioned, probably the best team in the world right now. And as I said, it was a good second half. I think there were positives. I think we tried to play at times in difficult kind of conditions, obviously, because the girls are working their ass off all game and probably tired when they get the ball. So it's as most people know, if you play sports, it's a lot easier to keep the ball when you have the ball. And when you don't have the ball and you get it, it can be very hard to keep a hold of it. But the girls did try to do that at times. So I think, as I said, there were a lot of positives. And Germany, I think we're always going to top the group. And if we're going into the start of this group, it would have always been, look, can we get to a playoff or can we finish the best second in the group? And that's, I think we're on course to do that. And the next game really is the big one, you know?
Yeah, I suspect the answer to this question could be everything. But in what areas of the game are Germany most ahead of a team like Ireland?
I think it goes down to the history they have more than anything. I think if you look at how far ahead they are, I think in terms of professionalism and what the girls are getting within the Irish team, I think we're quite young. And I think the German league, even just looking at that, I think a lot of the players in that German team would have been playing the German league throughout the years, and it's one of the strongest leagues in the world, you know. I think that's kind of where the big gap is. I think we've really started to make strides forward in terms of, if you look at the girls, most of the girls are probably playing professional football. If they're not playing professional football, they're on kind of really good programs from the S&C coach, either at their clubs or through the Irish team. So we're definitely making great strides forward, but I think you just have to look at the history of the German side. I think they're a step ahead of us, as we mentioned before, and they're a step ahead of many teams around Europe. You know, it's not just us, but I do think that we're, as I said, we're making strides forward and things are definitely changing. And the help is coming along that I think has been needed for years, and it's definitely coming. So I think the future is bright and there are chances that we will qualify for more tournaments as the years go on. But definitely this one here, I think we're still in the best chance of qualifying for this.
Yeah, it feels like a really good opportunity. Ukraine, October 23rd away, that's D-Day, really. It looks, I mean, like things can change ever so slightly, obviously, but it looks like once Ireland can avoid defeat in Kiev, they'll be guaranteed, or certainly they will be guaranteed to finish second in the group. And basically from there, for people who haven't had a look yet, the best three runners-up across the nine pools will go directly into the Euros now on in 2022 over in England, and then the remainder going to playoffs. So far, as things stand, Ireland are joint second-best runners-up. So they're in a really good position. They beat Ukraine 3-2 in Tala. That game was on TV. A lot of people would have seen it. It was a really exciting game. That was Vera Powell's first game in charge. Are Ireland improving under Powell?
I think so. I think just in terms of how we play, I think in the past, maybe if people would have watched maybe a couple of games against Germany, I think it would have always been, or even against the USA or teams that are that level ahead of us, it would have always kind of been, like, I think Irish teams always have that resilience and don't get beaten, like make sure that you give your all and you have that passion and the heart that comes with an Irish team. But I think what Vera has brought is she's brought that kind of quality to our play. It's not just about getting the ball and clearing it and then getting up the pitch and preparing for another attack. It's almost get the ball and can you play it and can you find somebody? Can we keep the ball? Don't give the ball away cheaply. You know, I think that's something that the players are definitely capable of doing, but you're definitely starting to see that throughout the games. I think even as I mentioned against Germany, that was a positive that I would have taken from the game, was that, like, I remember one stage Leanne Kiernan had the ball kind of inside her own half and she tried to pass it. Now it ended up nearly being a true ball for a German player, but I was on commentary and I remember trying to make it positive because it meant she wasn't just knocking it back to Anya to just lump forward, you know. It was trying to keep the ball and trying to play our style of football, which I think is important particularly going into playing against the likes of the Ukraine and Greece and Montenegro, which I think, as I said, we need to kind of be able to play football and keep it. And I think that's something that she has brought. I think, as we've seen in her interview, she's realistic as well. She knows where we're at and she knows the capabilities within our team. So I think, yeah, she's definitely tried to improve how we play. And I think she's brought that positivity towards our kind of forward play.
Mm. So we'd have more of an emphasis on possession maybe than at any other time in your Irish career, for instance.
Yeah, I think so. And don't get me wrong, I think Colin Bell, when he came in, he definitely tried to do that as well. He kind of probably would have been more about getting us set up really well defensively and then kind of working our way up the pitch. But I think something that, as I said, I remember one of her first meetings with the team, it was a case of, look, we want to play football. We don't want to kind of kick the ball away and then come back in and defend. And I think that's, even just for the girls mentally, I think that's what we wanted to hear. I think, as I said before, we have players who can play football. If you look at the three that were in midfield against Germany, like, they're three ball playing midfielders. So not like they worked their ass off in that game and they've done all they could to try and stop Germany play. But when we come to play against the other teams, they're the types of players that will want to get on the ball and play. And I think that's something, as I said, it's been encouraged over the years. But I think it's a different thing to encourage you and then when it comes to a game, maybe panicking and saying, no, get rid of it. Whereas now I think Vera has that calmness in trying to get the girls to actually keep the ball and be confident in playing.
So Ukraine, October 23rd, I mean, we're kind of counting down to that. You're obviously back at PMET now. How have you settled back in, I guess, probably pretty easily?
Yeah, I'm in a bit of a transition in my career. I've been away for a long time. I made a decision in February to come back and play in Ireland. And really, I'm kind of just trying to sort my life out. I mean, I've been away for a long time. And at the minute, I'm actually probably, in terms of, I'm unemployed, you know, I'm trying to sort myself off away from football. I have my own coaching company, which is obviously affected by COVID because we would have kind of been in schools and stuff coaching kids. So right now I'm kind of just trying to sort my life out, I suppose. While obviously football is a priority, I think my main focus was to try and get back to PMA and really start getting back into enjoying my football. And I really have been doing that. I think the girls have been great and welcomed me in. I think James, Vinny and Emma have been brilliant in terms of the training's always good. It's fun, it's high tempo. And yeah, I think for me, it's just about getting back to enjoying my football and playing with a smile on my face. And hopefully the rest will follow because obviously I want to be involved with the Irish team. I've been involved in the last few camps, but I want to be able to help the girls in whatever way I can, you know.
Had you stopped enjoying your football?
Yeah, I think so. I think I haven't made that a secret. I think there's, obviously I came back from injury and I really kind of wasn't sure what I had to do in terms of where to go and play. And I had my opportunity in Italy and I took that and there was a lot kind of in Italy, there was a lot of positives, don't get me wrong, but I think the negatives kind of outweighed the positives at times. And I kind of had to make that decision whether I stay there and kind of keep playing it at like a professional level in terms of full-time football, or do I come home and kind of try and do my own training, but also try to enjoy my training with PMount. And ultimately it came down to just wanting to get back, as I said, to enjoying my football, because like I think I believe, like most players, you're at your best when you're happy, you know, and right now I feel like I'm in the happiest place I've been in a while in terms of the style of football I'm playing and the training that I'm doing. So I'm happy at the minute. And as I said, I just want to step again back into the Irish team.
Yeah, very good. And interesting to the off the field stuff as well and build a career outside of football as well. So February 2020, you came back. That is, I mean, geez, there's timing and there's timing. You picked your moment.
I think if I'm getting out of Italy at the time, definitely good in terms of,
sure,
obviously we see later in the late February and the start of March, so I think getting home was obviously a positive even at that stage with everything that was going on in the world. But yeah, look, I think, as I said before, being happy off the pitch and on the pitch is the most important thing, and I'm home now and I'm kind of happy in terms of my off-field stuff, and now obviously I'm bringing together that with being happy by playing with good people and coaching and stuff like that, so that's definitely helping me back in.
Great. And what's the story with games and the latest restrictions? It's hard to keep track of everything. Are you playing?
Yeah, we're back playing. Obviously, the international break was over the weekend, but we played against Galway in our last game and we won that one. We unfortunately lost to Wexford a week before that, so a big game coming up this weekend against Shells. So it's going to be, as I said, a big game. We get our girls back who have been away during the week to try and prepare for that game. So yeah, it's good to be still playing because, as you mentioned, a lot of people probably aren't playing around Ireland at the minute, so to be able to train and then play matches is a gift right now, I suppose.
Good. Well, listen, hopefully we see you in a green jersey very soon. And, you know, there is like the Euros in England in 2022. It's such an amazing carrot for Irish football. Stephanie Roach, pleasure. Thanks, Emil.
Thanks very much, guys.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.